Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Marie LeConte.
And I'm Gráinne Maguire.
And thank you so much for downloading this first episode of Changing Politics, the podcast that will look at the week's news as well as looking at a specific, important issue and telling you what you can do to help fix it.
This week, we'll be looking at deaths in police custody, which, yes, feels like something you can't do anything about, but in fact, there is, and we'll be telling you what later on.
First, though, we need to ask you to please subscribe to this podcast, and if you enjoy it, leave us a nice review or rating wherever you got it, as that sort of thing helps other people find out about the show.
You can also follow us on Twitter at ChangingPolypod and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/changingpol, where we'll try to put up as much information as we can to help you make a difference. And if we can't, we'll put up outtakes where we sound like idiots so you can have a laugh at us. But before that, though, let's talk about the week's news.
Well, actually, why not start with Boris Johnson, who has been in the news again this week, you know, as most weeks since probably the day I was born, the day your parents was born, the day, you know, Earth started. So he reportedly was asked about the concerns businesses have about Brexit earlier this week. And his response was, fuck business, which he did not deny at FCA questions in the House of Commons. You know, he got the opportunity to actually say, you know, like, I never would have said that, whatever, which he did not say. So, yeah, apparently the Tory stance on business now is fuck it. I don't know. What do you make of that?
Genuinely, this feels like some sort of story. Maybe he leaked himself to establish himself as this sort of Trumpian, I don't play by the rules, I don't care. Yeah, this sort of like a bargaining thing he's sort of doing with the EU, that he's like, yeah, what's the worst you can get? Yeah, we don't care. Fuck you all. Businesses leave. We don't care. We're Britain. Do you think that's what he's playing towards?
I guess I quite like actually the theory that he's just absolutely desperate to get sacked from the cabinet. You know, partly because, you know, that is a man who does not enjoy working very hard. Yeah. And, you know, and I sympathise, which is why, in fairness, I'm not Foreign Secretary. But also, I think, you know, definitely still has leadership ambitions of his own. So I think, yeah, the theory goes that effectively he just keeps trying to do things that will eventually sort of get him sacked from cabinet. And in fairness, you know, he's been very good at that so far, just doing many things that should get a cabinet minister sacked. But Theresa May is just not doing anything, which has become such an odd kind of situation where what could he possibly do? Genuinely, I feel like if he were to get, you know, sort of like on Whitehall and just walk around with his dick out,
yeah,
Theresa May would probably brief out, well, you know, the Prime Minister gave Boris Johnson a stern talking to and he'll have to stay in the corner for one day.
Because when I heard he said fuck business, I thought he was referring to his private life. Because is it like a case of like Groundhog Day where every day he wakes up, he's like, please, 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 how do I get fired today? And he's being sort of punished by the gods to every day he wakes up. The same song is playing on the radio and he's still the Foreign Secretary.
I think that, you know, like that. Joking aside for a second, I think that was been really interesting this time round. You know, especially with the fact that, you know, he missed the vote on Heathrow by going to Afghanistan to meet with the Deputy Foreign Minister of Afghanistan, who, you know, I know is an incredibly busy man, you know, so like it's just bad luck really that that one meeting sort of, you know, fell on the day of the Heathrow vote.
But it's fine, he flew from Gatwick, so it wasn't a conflict of interest.
But, you know, it is the fact that actually so many Conservative MPs actually took to Twitter to just absolutely relentlessly take the piss out of him for that. So, you know, people like Tom Tugendhat, who's the chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, Greg Hands, who resigned from the government actually to vote on the Heathrow vote and go against the whip. And so I think that, you know, Boris must be realising, I think, that, you know, he just does not have the support of the Conservative Parliamentary Party. In a way, like, he never fully did anyway, but, like, he just definitely does not now.
Why doesn't he just quit?
Why would he do that? I think Boris Johnson is a man who needs a narrative in anything he do. And you can see that with Brexit as well. You know, he's kind of clearly a sort of like romantic man at heart where he likes big ideas and big concepts and big things. And I think that actually there is no... The only thing I could really see was would be for him to do that. So Andrea Jenkins resigned from the front bench a few weeks ago to say, you know, actually, I just want to fight for Brexit. That's my thing. You know, I'm a massive Brexiteer. I just want to properly fight for Brexit as a, you know, as a backbencher. And that works, you know, fair enough. I think that's slightly mad, but, you know, whatever. Whereas I think that if Boris were to do that, obviously all eyes would turn on him. And again, he would have to do a lot of work. And that is not, you know, he's not a man who enjoys doing a lot of work. So I don't, you know, I think, yeah, he's someone who needs a narrative. And I don't think he would have that narrative, you know, if he were to quit.
What if he quit to go on Love Island? Like, that would be a good excuse. He'd be like, I'm really sorry, I can't make the vote. It's really important I find love.
And in fairness, you know, his dad was on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and his sister was on Celebrity Big Brother. So actually, you know, to complete the set,
yeah.
I think it would be quite good for him to do that. Then Leo Johnson, we can send him to, I don't know, Dancing with the Stars.
Be perfect. And our close friend of the podcast, Liz Truss, has been in the news this week because she was gently ribbing her colleague, Michael Gove, saying that she was sort of criticising the government getting involved, telling us when we should be, when we're drinking too much, when we're not eating properly, and that we shouldn't be using outside goves.
Wood burning goves.
Do you think there's... Is this sort of more sign of sort of backstabbing in the parliament, or what was she up to?
Yes and no. I'd say that I think it's become quite fashionable in the cabinet to actually make fun of Michael Gove. And, you know, for a bit of context, I think it is the fact that actually everyone in Westminster knows about Michael Gove's ambitions. You know, he wants to be leader, he wants to be in number 10, but it's the fact that he's not always been sort of, you know, very cunning about it. So, you know, in the past few months, obviously I go to quite a lot of events in Westminster for my job. And genuinely, like, you could not escape Michael Gove. There was just like a run of about 2 or 3 months. Any event you sort of got there, you got your glass of sort of like warm white wine, you'd look up and boom, there was Michael Gove. Like, generally, you know, so there was kind of that thing. And clearly I was not the only one who'd noticed that. And to the point that actually, you know, Liz Truss was not the only one who made fun of Michael Gove that way. So there was the Policy Exchange, the right of centre think tank. They had a summer party last week and Theresa May actually gave the speech, and she kind of started it by saying, you know, actually, those of you here who do the summer party circuit will have noticed that this is a bit of a collector's event because it's a reception organised by a right of centre organisation, and Michael Gove is not speaking. So, you know, if even your boss is making fun of you in front of your pals. So I think it's partly that. I think it's just basically other cabinet ministers and the prime minister saying, hey, Gove, by the way, we know that, like, we see you. We see what you're trying to do.
Oh, he's a bit thirsty.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's horny on Main. Michael Gove is horny on Main.
It's kind of like how I feel about Rita Ora. I feel like we had no say. She just was famous. There was no build up. There was no, like, she's single here. It's just like, oh yeah, she's famous. It's a tax you have to pay for Beyonce. She's just there. And is that how, is that you go to summer party, the free wine, you have to put up Michael Gove could be in the room. Theresa May has got an away day coming up pretty soon where her cabinet are going to meet up to discuss what they want from Brexit. This is just what I'm trying to think of an analogy that's as crazy as, oh, hey, EU, you know, that thing we caused and we started. It's the EU saying you have to make up your mind what you want. And this is probably a bigger chat, but it's just absolutely bizarre that Brexit is going to happen in a year's time and they still haven't decided what they even want from it, let alone what the negotiations are I just think it's absolutely madness.
But I think the issue, again, it just comes back to the fact that the Conservative Party has been effectively split down the middle on Europe, you know, for decades. And I think, you know, like Theresa May, you know, I will happily blame her for a lot of things. But actually, even if you had some kind of, you know, like the most skilled and able and talented and bright sort of like PM in Downing Street at the moment, they could still not reconcile the fact that actually, you know, half their cabinet is in favour, like, you know, of sort of like a hard Brexit and the other half isn't. So I think, you know, that's the issue. But again, I don't know, there's kind of an undercurrent at the moment, you know, a sort of theory, I guess, which is that actually every time Theresa May kicks the can down the road like this, she's actually making Brexit softer and softer because you're kind of losing a lot of options by doing this. Mm-hmm. I still think, and, you know, and everyone I've spoken to in the past few months actually reckons that we will just end up with quite a soft Brexit. And actually, we have no idea, as far as I can tell, no one knows if that's something Theresa May is doing on purpose, something she started doing kind of accidentally, then realised what happened. Because, you know, obviously she was a shy Remainer, but Remainer nonetheless. But the case is that actually by doing this and by kind of keeping the cabinet in this kind of constant state of crisis, actually that's how you kind of outwit the hard Brexiteers.
Distract them. Mm. I can't think of anything more. Just think it's
that's happened. It. That's my only opinion on Brexit. Thank you. Good night. I've been really calm.
So, Marie, you're a millennial. What have you snowflakes been offended by this week?
Well, actually, I'll have you know, Grandma, that there was a study done by YouGov this week which shows that actually students are not as easily offended as, you know, the media would like us to think. And so it was actually quite an interesting thing. So they, you know, sort of like gave a statement and then asked, so students and non-students, whether they were offended by that take or not. And actually, overwhelmingly, students and non-students reacted the same. So you've got, you know, let's say a statement like, someone who believes that terrorist attacks in Britain can be justified. So 64% of students would ban that, like someone saying this as a speaker. And 63% of non-students would ban that person. So, you know, very similar figures. Then you've got things that, you know, someone who wants all religions to be banned. So 35% of students would ban that person. And 32% of the general public. So again, you know, that's a very small gap. I think the only two that actually were quite interesting were, so the one I guess were students actually were more easily offended, I suppose, than the general public, was on whether like someone who claimed that vaccinations cause autism. And so actually 49% of students would ban a speaker, you know, that had those views, versus only 30% of the general public. But then, that being said, you know, there is also, which I find weirdly quite funny and I'm not quite sure why, on the subject of, you know, someone who believes the royal family should be abolished, 10% of students would ban the speaker who had those views, but 23% of the general public, of non-students, would ban someone saying the royal family should be abolished, which I find quite odd. So, yeah, so the youth love vaccines. And the general public just really love the royal family is my main conclusion from this.
Meghan Markle is very popular. We have to take that into the consideration.
That is true. But yes, yeah, so no, it does show that actually, you know, it's almost like, you know, some kind of scandals that run and run and run in the tabloids actually are often, you know, kind of completely blown out of proportions. How, you know, did you know that? It was just so shocking.
Do you think the reason why students were so sort of chilled and relaxed is they were just so exhausted on the way to like their third job to pay for their student fees? They're like, I don't care. Talk about what you want. I'm starting my shift at McDonald's in half an hour.
I was going to say they're probably just too hungover. So I don't know. I feel like we had different experiences in university.
Why has it turned into this whole tabloid caricature of university students being these hypersensitive snowflakes that want, you know, participation medals for doing everything?
But I think it's just, you know, it's not something new at all. There's always been a kind of generational gap. And, you know, and that's how actually you sort of like get social justice and social change, is because, you know, the younger generation will tend to be more socially liberal, let's say, you know, kind of like talk about things that the older generations don't necessarily talk about. But that always happens. You know, feminism happened that way. Mm. You know, the fight for gay rights happened that way. The fight for trans rights is happening at the moment. And so I think that's why it just feels so odd, because, you know, those kind of middle-aged people going, this is the first time, you know, yeah, young people have, you know, had those weird views. And it's like, you were young, like, granted, about, you know, 70 years ago, but you were young one day, you know. chilling around the dinosaurs. Mm. And, you know, you were like that as well. The people around you were like that as well.
Do you think sort of in the 30s and 40s, there was old people going, oh, for God's sake, all these people demanding seatbelts in cars. We drove in a car. We just got on with it. We got concussion, brain damage, lost a foot.
That's not even the 30s and 40s, isn't it? I'd say that's a lot more recent, actually, seatbelts. Because even my parents are occasionally, like, when I was a kid, were a bit like, meh.
Yeah. All these women demanding a vote. Oh, my God. We get it, snowflake.
But even weird stuff, you know, we look back on, we're like, you know, my parents smoked on planes. And even I, you know, like, a very heavy smoker, like, that would be my personal hell. Mm-hmm. By all means, have a smoking room in a plane, by the way. If anyone's listening is in charge of planes, mm-hmm. smoking rooms on planes, that's all I'm saying. But yeah, no, so I think, you know, change happens because, you know, at least partly the younger generations have these new ideas and come up with these mm-hmm. things. And also, yeah, get offended by stuff the same way that, again, you know, some generations ago, some woman had to go like, hey, like, you know, the sexism, just yeah. can you dial it down like a tiny bit?
Yeah.
So that always happens. It's not new at all.
Sorry if I'm being annoying, but can I have be paid the same way as men? Ooh, sorry. Bring back national service.
Well, actually, I can't believe I'm saying that, but this is what centrist sort of, you know, like heartthrob Emmanuel Macron is doing
in
France.
Oh, the Disney prince.
So, yeah, well, yeah, now every 16-year-old is going to have to spend a month doing national service.
Is that why you can buy flick knives everywhere in France?
Yes, it is. but, yeah, no, so up until now, so you had one day, which is called La Journée d'Appel, at least back in my day, whereas just one day, you know, you, like, spent it chilling with the army. I never did it because I'm very cool and like busy. Also, I moved here when I was 17 and then they tried to make me do it here and I was like, no, you'll never guess my new address. Anyway, so I can never go back to France, but that's another story. But yes, no, there will now be compulsory, like a month every teenager will have to do national service with, again, sort of like military tinged stuff.
Could you sign up for the French Foreign Legion?
Oh my, I mean, that would be a great movie. I genuinely would absolutely watch that.
Like Private Benjamin, it'd be amazing.
Oh God, but yeah, which again I think is a really interesting thing because especially abroad, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, Macron, you know, he is basically like Tony Blair, but mm-hmm. somehow even better. He's going to save France, he's going to save Europe, he's going to save the world, he's going to mm-hmm. do everything. Where, you know, even at the time, most French people were like, yeah, you know what? Actually, we kind of had the choice between him and the fascists. So we're quite happy he won, but basically because he's not a fascist. So I think that seeing policies like that is really interesting because it's showing that actually he is, you know, some of his policy ideas are weird. He's a bit of a weird dude, you know, and he definitely, you know, he met the Pope this week and it was extremely funny. When you look at the pictures, it genuinely looks like it's Macron going, fine, guess I'll meet the Pope, you know. Hi, Pope. I hope you're really honoured to meet me, Emmanuel Macron.
Wasn't there a moment where somebody, like a kid, was rude to him in a crowd or something?
Yeah, some kid called him Menu, which, you know, is a nickname that's been used for him before. And he just addressed that kid and was basically like, you know, no, I'm like Mr. President, I'm Monsieur le Président. But in you know, in the worst tone as well. And apparently, like, it's really bleak. So that kid basically has been an absolute anxious wreck since, has not barely left his house, has not been to school since, or at least had not been to school in the week after that. So he just ruined the life, basically, of this random teenage, like, boy who seemed just quite sweet because he wanted to get, like, quite a fun sort of, like, you know, yet authoritative clip for Twitter.
So he's not Tony Blair because Tony Blair was all like, call me Tony. Not call me Mr. Prime Minister.
But that's the weird thing, because actually Macron has played a bit on the, you know, I'm not one of those, you know, I'm not part of the political elite. And Menu is, again, has definitely been used. But I think it's only he gets to decide when he's called Menu, which is not the greatest look.
Oh, my God. I may have to have a more nuanced opinion on him than he's hot.
Sorry. He is still hot, though.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
We're going to talk about a serious issue now. Grainne, do you want the stats on death in police custody?
Honestly, not really.
But we should talk about it because it's important. And actually, there is something we can do to make things better. So since 1990, there have been 1,655 deaths in police custody or following contact with the police in England and Wales. According to stats from 2015, if you get arrested, there is a 1 in 33,000 chance you will die in police custody. And if you're BME, there is a 1 in 14,000 chance you'd die in police custody. So just for comparison, there is a 1 in 100,000 chance you'd die by skydiving. In fact, the charity inquest found that the proportion of BAME deaths in custody where restraint is a feature is over 2 times greater than it is in other deaths in custody. And the proportion of BME deaths in custody where mental health related issues are a feature is nearly 2 times greater than it is in other deaths in custody.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate for a second. So I think the reason why we don't know as much about this or it's not reported as much is that it's difficult for people to have sympathy for people who've been arrested because in their head they think, well, they've been arrested, they've obviously done something wrong, and they're reluctant to sort of give them the benefit of the doubt. And people are thinking, oh, well, it's sad that obviously these people have died, but then they shouldn't have got arrested in the first place. So it's sort of a very confusing situation.
Well, let's look at a specific example of someone who died in police custody. A 23-year-old graduate, Shaney Lewis, died in police custody in 2010. We spoke to his parents about it. I'll let his mum say what happened.
In 2010, he had a mental health episode. And after a few days, we took him... Well, he wanted to go to the hospital to seek attention. And we took him to what we thought was a safe place. And... eventually, after we left him at Royal Bethlehem, he wanted to leave, and they had assured us that as a voluntary patient, he could leave at any time. But instead of calling us, they called the police, and eventually 11 policemen restrained him into prolonged episodes, and he died. But what was so upsetting was that when his body went limp, they thought he was faking it. And so they left the room, left him, didn't give him any medical attention. The door locked. They had to find the key. They opened the door. Of course, by then it was too late. And all the medical staff had said that if he had had medical attention before they left him, then he would probably have been alive.
That story is absolutely horrifying.
It is, and that's just one story. There are so many more out there, and they're all horrific.
So what happened to the police responsible?
Well, in the case of Shaney Lewis, there was an inquiry, but it was flawed, so it got thrown out. So then there was another inquiry, and that got thrown out too. Then there was an inquest that found the police and mental health services to be at fault. Then six police officers faced private Metropolitan Police misconduct hearings last year, 7 years after his death. They were cleared of any misconduct. In fact, there have been no successful murder or manslaughter prosecutions relating to state agents, such as police or prison officers, involved in a death since inquest began monitoring in 1990.
Okay, but do the police accept that there's a problem?
Well, the Police Federation say that any death is a death too many, but that the police don't have the resources or funding they need to properly tackle the problem.
This is so depressing.
It is, but at the same time, there are people out there fighting to make things right. Here are Shaney's parents again.
Most of the full story came out during the inquest, which had taken nearly seven years to get to, because during the initial investigation, there were some botch-ups by the IPCC. The court ordered them to reinvestigate. It took them another 2 years before they got round to a conclusion. Then we went to the inquest. And between the bad lies or the obvious lies they told, everybody saw through the police's statement, and they were indicted, you know, heavily. But as they say, the inquest is only a fact-finding. It's not a fault-finding affair.
Over the course of the 7 years, we found out bits, you know, dribbled, you know, information came out. But, you know, like Conrad says, it was the inquest that we really found out all that was happening. And, yeah, it took 7 years of pain and heartache to eventually get to the inquest, but it was worthwhile because, you know, we did find out a lot of information that was very harrowing and very upsetting. And we listened for 14 weeks, and I think the jury deliberated for about 10, 12 days. And eventually, you know, after a lengthy narrative, they found out that there'd been excessive, unnecessary force, and that Cheney's life could have been saved.
The 8 years happened. I'm still not in a good way, in the sense that the whole thing depresses me. And I would not like to see another parent, another father, speaking for myself, to feel the way I do. You question yourself. You question everybody around you. You know, what did we do wrong? We thought we took him to a place of safety. You know? But it's my fault for taking him there. So you blame yourself. It's my cross to bear for the rest of my life. And it's not an easy cross. But one of the satisfying things will be if this law goes through and it stops another parent, another child being killed in this brutal manner. Because it was a violent and brutal death.
I can't imagine how they get over what happened to them, and they're so dignified and they're so positive and they're so brave to experience what they had. It's so cruel and so unfair, and they did all the right things and they still lost their son. And the fact that they're determined to try and get something good to come out of it, I just think it's absolutely it's just incredible that they've able to turn what is this absolute horrible tragedy in their life to try and improve things and make sure that it won't happen again.
Oh no, it is absolutely incredible. And actually, you know, that's what their MP Steve Reed is trying to do as well. So he's pushing a member's bill that can stop horrific incidents like this happening again. I caught up with him about it.
I had the opportunity to bring forward a private member's bill, and having been made aware of the problems and the injustices in the mental health services, I wanted to do something to correct that. Now, the issues that led to Cheney's death, to me, are built on racial bias in the system, if that's the right term to use. There are assumptions made about young black men, schizophrenia, drugs and violence and aggression, that leads to them being subject to much more severe forms of physical restraint and medication than other people that are presenting with the same problems. Now, in extreme circumstances, that leads to injury or even death. Now, to dig into what's gone wrong, you need access to statistics and data. But mental health hospitals or other places where mental health patients are treated do not record the use of restraint, force, in the same way. So you can't compare one hospital or trust with another. You can't compare one part of the country with another. So the first thing my bill intends to do is to standardise the way that data is recorded every time force is used against a mental health patient. Second point is all police called into a mental health unit will be required to wear operating body-worn video cameras. That alone, according to academic research that I've seen, will reduce the use of restraint by around 50% where police are involved. That's a good in itself. But in addition to that, it means there is evidence available to show if restraint is used inappropriately. It also protects the police in case there are allegations that are untrue against them. So I'm pleased to say that the police are supporting that proposal. Third thing the bill will do, it will require every mental health hospital to have in place a policy on reducing the use of force. They should always use de-escalation techniques rather than resorting to force or violence against somebody. And they will also need to appoint a senior manager who will be publicly accountable for ensuring that force is being reduced and that staff are being properly trained before they're involved in using force against patients. And finally, I want the bill to trigger an independent investigation every time there is a death in a mental health hospital. No parents, no person should have to battle for 7 years like Shenny Lewis's parents did just for justice after they've lost their child in such traumatic circumstances. And I also want the families of the people who have died to be given automatic legal aid, because you've got a very unfair system. There's not a level playing field when the authorities have access to the highest quality legal advice, but families, many of whom have no idea how the justice system works, are just left to flounder on their own.
But who actually supports it? Everyone.
It's really well supported across all parties. We were at the committee stage, and they said at that stage that it showed Parliament working at its best, because all parties supported the bill. There was no opposition.
Okay, so that members' bill should sort it out, right?
Wrong, because actually, since I did that interview, it went to the Commons, but got talked out of the Commons by Philip Davies. And actually, I mean, you might have missed it. You know, you remember that day when Christopher Chope actually talked out the upskirting bill? That was the same day. So, you know, you've got kind of Philip Davies and Christopher Chope, like, you know, Batman and Robin, but dicks.
What, is this what they got into politics? They're like, how can we shit on people's lives this week?
It's, I mean, you know, their argument is that, you know, they're actually, it's not the bills they're against, it's actually the parliamentary process of having sort of like private members' bills and stuff. But I don't know, I don't even have words, and I'm just, you know, I'm not sure there's anything polite I can really say about them. And actually, as a matter of fact, you know, if you don't find that distasteful enough for you, the way he actually talked out that bill was by reading an incredibly detailed account of what actually happened to Shaney the day he died. And actually, so Shaney's parents were listening, and Philip Davies was aware of the fact that Shaney's parents were listening as he did that.
It's really hard to know why certain people get into politics. You'd like to think they think they're making the world a better place, but it's very hard to sort of understand other people's reasoning at times, isn't it?
It is, but, you know, on the bright side, people haven't stopped fighting. It's coming up again for the third reading in Parliament, and they really need MPs to support this bill. If 100 MPs turn up to vote, Philip Davies or anyone else actually can filibuster it the next time. And that's why Mrs. Lewis is so passionate about getting support for this.
6th of July, we're having the third reading then, and praying that it goes through, because the next stage is the House of Lords. We really, I mean, it's so important that people get their MPs to vote, to come to the House and vote on that day. Often we're there, well, we've always been there, and there are very few MPs that appear in the chamber. They might be in their offices, but they don't appear in the chamber. So it would be wonderful for, you know, if everybody could get their MP to go to the chamber and vote and make sure that, you know, silly games are not played, because really it was pretty pathetic. You know, it wasn't a very good picture of democracy. It really wasn't. You know, it was pretty childish.
Members should turn up to save the future of our children, the future of us, because the bill is to save the lives of these young children who are going to be our future. It's not a frivolous bill of any kind.
No, it's not. It's a serious
bill to help us move forward. Mm. And for them to come out and give it the support it needs without the filibustering or the political games that do happen still in this day and age.
Okay, so what can little old me, as in regular person, not an MP, do?
Well, you and everyone at home can write to your own MP. It's really easy to Google your local MP. There's an online form you can fill out to contact them. It takes 5 minutes. You need to tell them to turn up to the House of Commons to vote for this bill because it's going to raise accountability, is going to make sure that police officers wear body cameras, and is going to make sure that police work with and not instead of hospital staff. We just need 100 people, and there are 73 MPs just in London. So come on, we can do that, right?
OK, so let's write to our MPs, pass this bill and fix deaths in police custody once and for all.
Absolutely, and actually that's it for this week. Next week we'll be saying silly things about the news as well as looking at what you can do to help change abortion laws.
We're just going for the easy subjects, aren't we?
In the meantime, please do rate, review and subscribe to Changing Politics wherever you got it from, and follow us on Twitter at Changing Polypod, and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/changingpol, to find out more.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.